Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I am Martin, joined by the king of the casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, please introduce today's guest.
Well, I am super duper happy because we have an amazing guitarist, wonderful bassist. This Heaven and Earth band is absolutely amazing. We have Stuart Smith and we have Lynn Sorensen. They're here to talk about their new album, V5. Whichever you like to, whichever way you want to go. Wonderful album, guys, and so happy to have you on the show.
Great, thanks, Brett.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Brett. Yeah.
So, first off, let's talk about the album. It comes out July 16th, so super soon. You guys must be so excited, eh?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So, you've got some new fresh faces in this band, this iteration of the band. Why don't you tell us how the album came about?
Well, Lynn and I, we were sort of we had the contract for a while, but we really couldn't find the right people. We got Simon Wright from Dio and AC/DC, but then we had to find the right singer, and that took us a while. And then we had to get the keyboard player, which was George, and our singer is in Italy, our keyboard player is in Hungary. So Lynn produced and sort of recorded the album. So by the time everything was, we'd got everybody lined up, we were up against the gun contract-wise. We had to, Frontiers gave us some more time, but we still had to do it. So it was very spontaneous. And Lynn will probably be able to tell you best about the recording process.
Well, yeah, me and Stuart, and we started writing, and then we brought in Simon, and we started writing in Stuart's living room to get the, you know, the album starting to write. And then we had to deal with Gianluca over in Italy. He, you know, in writing some melodies and producing his vocals, which I always like working with a vocalist in person if I can. I mean, it's just, but halfway around the world, the pandemic, there was nothing we could do. So his country was in serious lockdown. So we had to shuffle tracks back and forth and take what he had written and rewrite some things and add some things. And I had to produce him from a distance. And then George would put a bunch of things on. He'd always give me five or six different ideas to put in and produce. That was pretty easy to do. And eventually we got the record recorded, written and recorded, you know, what was it? Probably about 2.5-3 months, Stuart.
Yeah, that was about right. When we were writing the main tracks, most of them, there was Lynn and Simon and myself, and we did it at my house. And put my amplifier in my office, ran a cable into the living room, and then to Lynn's Pro Tools. Lynn plugged directly in, and Simon Rice played on an electronic drum kit. So that's how we put the things together. And then once we'd done all the recording, we went into Total Access Studio in Redondo Beach with the Wynn Davis, and Simon replaced the electronic drums with real drums.
Which was a daunting task, and he did it very well. I mean, a lot of times you can tell when a recording is done from the top down, you know, with the drums coming at the end, but he was able to sync things and with his groove and feel like just a monster. It was a wonderful session, and it ended up really good.
So then, you know, I take it that that this is not the normal way of working for you. So how long would you normally, I guess, want to take to record an album?
That was
the thing where I wanted a raw record. I mean, if I'm going to produce, I like the rawness of rock. Rock is feel. It's an attitude. I mean, the thing that is a rock probably will never die. It'll keep, you know, having a downward trend, and it will spiral up again forever, because it's an attitude, it's a feeling, and I like that that initial inspiration. I didn't want to take a year or a year and a half to record and, you know, produce, record, and mix and master a record. I wanted to do it quickly, because that's, you get that feeling, you get a lot of these tracks, it's that demo feel, it's that initial thing. It's like having the girl the first time. It's, you know, Stuart's solos are very spontaneous on this record, rather than really even hardly thought out. They were just done on the cuff by him. So, and the time constraint was the main problem with that. It forced us to do that.
Yeah, that's what really impresses me about the album is I listened to it like three times now. And usually after about 30, 45 seconds into a song, I know where it's going. Consistently on this album with these songs, it doesn't go where I expect it to go. And that's a good thing because it keeps it fresh for me every single time.
Yeah, I think we went and the writing on this album, it was we did a lot of just, it was, as Lynn said, it was very spontaneous. So we didn't overthink it. And that's, we'd be Lynn and I and Simon would be playing, and one of us would just go somewhere else and the rest of everyone would follow. And that's the way we crafted the songs.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, it's fun to do. It's the way I like to do things. You know, it really comes off with that grit, you know, raw feel to it. Yeah.
So then, Stuart, how long does it take you to kind of come up with a solo, and how do you know when you feel like a solo is right for the song?
Well, in the past albums, I really sort of, I didn't think of them so much, but I spent a lot of time in the studio. The producer would want me to get the whole thing, and if I had one note wrong, rather than fix that one note, he'd want me to do the whole thing. And by which time you lose the spontaneity of it. On this album, we'd be sat there writing and maybe play a song about 20, 30, maybe more times. And then Lynn would say, okay, we're going to go for a take on this one. But by which time I was sort of bored with just doing rhythm tracks. So when it came to the solo, I just did a solo off the top of my head. And Lynn, then Simon would go home and Lynn would... re-record the bass, and he'd have me re-record the guitars, double the guitars, sometimes acoustics, what have you. And I say, all right, I'm ready to do the solo now. And he said, you're done. I said, what do you mean I'm done? I haven't started yet. And he said, you're done. And he said, listen to this. And
we would get in a fight, of course. He would say, no, I want to do it again. And I'd say, no, we're not.
Well, we tried it a few times. I said, look, I could do better. And so I do another one, and then said, no, you haven't got beaten it. So we just really went, most of the stuff is just first take stuff. And I like that. It's you know, personally, I think it's some of better playing. You know, you've got some of the warts and all.
Yep.
So then, Lynn, what is it like to produce Stuart and, you know, Simon and stuff like that? I mean, we've got, and I know you've worked with amazing people. Both of you have worked with some amazing people. So, you know, what is it like to kind of like take these geniuses and kind of mix them together?
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was wonderful. I mean, the playing, the feel, the groove, the attitude, it was all there. And so, you know, when you have these things, it makes mixing a product much better than having to manufacture it from the desk, you know. And it, when you do that, it starts to sound artificial. This is a very natural, organic record, and it was just a pleasure to work with him. Other than the fights that me and Stuart would get into on the couch about him wanting to do his solos more, it was a pretty easy deal.
And Simon writes constant complaining. He's our complainer in chief. He's not happy unless he's complaining.
It sounds like it must have been a wonderful studio setting. You know,
seriously, we all get on really well, and we've been friends for years. And it was just Simon actually was with us for a while when we played it with Heaven and Earth at the Vasby Festival. So, and I've known Simon for years, and so Lynn and we both played with him. So it was he's a super nice guy.
Yep. I'm glad to hear everybody gets along. I was worried the Euro Cup finals there with Italy and England maybe tear the band apart, but it doesn't sound like it's going to happen.
That's funny. I never thought of it that way. That's pretty. Yeah.
Is that something that that you guys looked into? Watch those games?
Well, I did. I was rooting for that big tall guy on Italy, man. What was his name? The goalie. Jeez, he was a monster.
Oh yeah, that guy. He's like 6'8" or something.
He's gorgeous. Yeah, he's 9'20" and yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a difficulty watching sports. I've never I've been to one soccer match in my life. I love participating, you know, in martial arts, soccer. I love participating in sports. Just watching it bores me. I've been to one soccer match. That was a match.
Well, and that's right. I mean, ultimately, Stuart, you know, I mean, nobody's going to want to piss you off in the studio anyways, so, you know, given your martial arts background.
Oh, well, I threatened to shoot Lynn a few times. I actually brought out the gun.
Yeah. Well, we were going to have a WMA match. I did, you know, yeah, great.
Well, it sounds like you had a little Phil Spector thing going on there. That's great stuff. But it is true. I mean, you have to keep yourselves in shape, though, don't you, in order to go out and tour. You have to keep yourselves, you know, at least to some degree, you have to take care of yourselves physically in order to be able to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So then, oh, sorry.
Nope, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to ask, like, you know, let's talk just about Heaven and Earth, the band. I mean, you know, Lynn, you mentioned earlier the attitude, but like, just, you know, over the years, the different iterations, like, what is the, besides you, Stuart, like, what would you say the core attitude of Heaven and Earth is?
Well, I mean, the first album, I got offered this deal, and I didn't have a band, the very first album. So I just called up everyone I knew. And at the time, Richie Sambora was my brother-in-law because I was married to Heather Locklear's sister. And so I called him up and said, hey, would you mind singing on my solo album? He said, sure. No one ever asked me to sing. And then he brought his guitars because he liked the song so much, so he played some guitar on it. And then I called Jill Lynn Turner, who's been a friend for years. And then it was a sort of steamroller domino effect from there. I mean, everyone just came in. And but the problem with it was people were asking us to tour. You know, they're saying, well, can you bring all these people up? That's a bit ridiculous. So I decided to drop my name from the title when we got the second deal and get a permanent singer in. And we got Kelly Keeling and we did the album. That was Windows to the World. Didn't really work out with him. Then we started touring with Kelly Hansen. And the band just started to get noticed out here in the States. Kelly's a great frontman and a great singer. Just started to get noticed, and then he got the offer from Foreigner. So that sort of put a kibosh on it. And then Steve Priest called me up and said, because when I first came over here, I was involved with Steve Priest and Sweet. So do you want to try getting Sweet back together again? So we gave it a shot. It worked. There was a lot of demand for it. And I played with that for about 5 years. And then I got offered a deal from someone who's an investor and said that he put the money in to do a new Sweet album. So I got the band together and we all agreed. And then by the time we got home, Steve Priest called the manager and said, well, I don't want to do an album. No one will buy it. So I told the investor and he said, well, why don't you do a Heaven and Earth album? Much before you did. And I was getting about a bit tired of the Sweet situation. So I quit Sweet and got Heaven and Earth together, and we did Dig, and we toured all over Europe and everything. That was great. The Montreux Jazz Festival was my favorite. Lynn and I got up in the morning the day before our gig, and Geneva is just absolutely beautiful, Montreux. And we walked across the street over to the Grand Hotel where they recorded Machine Head, and sat on the balcony having a beer. It was great. And overlooking Lake Geneva. And anyway, we did the tour. Then we came back and we did the next album, Hard to Kill. The problem is unless you're constant, you know, the standard of musicians we need, there's very few musicians that they generally tend to be just jump from gig to gig. And unless you've got sort of constant work, they're not going to stay because, you know, or someone will get a better offer. Lynn and I have sort of kept together, and with this new album, I mean, it's just been really Lynn and I. And then, of course, we brought Simon into the fold and then the new guys. But, you know, of course, COVID happened, so we couldn't tour on the last album, Hard to Kill. So as I say, unless you've got a major tour lined up, it's very hard to keep the musicians together.
Oh yeah,
Lynn is just like a bug. You can't get rid of him. He just hangs
I'm like stuck to your wall. Is that what it is? That what you're
you have to keep them all.
Do you guys like have any touring plans set up? Is that kind of looking like it will happen for you for this album?
We hope so. I mean, really, this band sort of belongs in Europe because we don't have a big enough name in the States. The problem for us is to unless we want to go and sit in a van or pile into a van and just go around with all the gear in the same van and sleeping on couches and this kind of, or in the van with the gear. I mean, it's just, we're too old for that. So to do a tour properly, you've got to have the festivals going, which isn't going to happen anywhere till next year. So we're hoping to get out next year because, I mean, your festivals will pay for the tour and then you pay the clubs the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and you make enough to make it worthwhile. But unless, without the festivals, it's for us, I mean, with the travel from the States for Lynn, Simon and I, and from Hungary for George, and from Italy for Gianluca. It'll be tough. So we are talking to agents, and there's some interest there. So obviously it depends on how well the album's received as well by the fans. If everyone says, "Hey, we love it," and there's good response, and the radio picks it up in Europe, which radio is good over there. I remember when we finished the European tour. The last gig was the Steelhouse Festival, and everyone was going home. My parents were out there, so I went and rented a car. They dropped me off at the tour bus at Bristol Airport and rented a car and then drove to my parents. And I remember getting in the car, putting on the radio, and there's Heaven and Earth coming out of the radio, which would never happen in the States, not on terrestrial radio. So, it's, as I say, it's down to how successful it is on radio and everything else.
Yep.
That must still be amazing to hear your music on the radio, like, I guess no matter what age you are, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the 70s were great for that. You'll be driving around Hollywood with your windows open and down Sunset Boulevard, and all the bands would be there, and you'd look at each other, look, I'm on the radio.
Funny you mentioned the Sunset Strip, and, you know, we think about that in the 70s, or sorry, the 80s. So much and got so much publicity, but I guess it was probably just as crazy in the 70s.
Yeah, sorry, I meant the 80s. That's when I moved out here, 86. But yeah, it was pretty wild.
Yeah, you were, what, 5 in the 70s? Is that how old you were?
What's that?
Well, you were 5 years old in the 70s, right?
That's 4, actually.
That's right. So, you know, when it comes down to, you know, just knowing all the people that you know, I mean, how is it that you kind of maintain the relationships over the years? Is that an easy thing in the music industry, or is that a challenge still?
No, it's a challenge. I mean, there's some people that you just click with and you become lifelong friends, and there's some people that you just work with for a while and just can't stand them after that. There's a lot of things that goes into it. Lynn will tell you an interesting story about what Alice Cooper said. What was he say? He said to you guys, Lynn?
Yeah, I toured with Alice back, well, not in his band, but with Paul Rogers. And we opened for him through Australia in 2001. And he sat down and he said, you know, I look for players that can play really well, but there's a lot of players that can play really well. He says, I want players that can play well, and I want them to look good. He says, there's still quite a few players like that. He says, probably one of the more important things is I look for players that can play well, look good, and then you can ride around in a tour bus with. And he says, then that's the big thing that I want to have. And you know, it's just keeping a band together is just kind of like an Abbey Road album cover, everybody walking across the street, you know, the band just walking across the street in a line, you know, keeping everyone going in the same direction.
Yeah, a bit like herding cats.
Kind of like that sometimes. Yeah.
Now, Lynn, in your case, I mean, working with Paul Rogers, you it's hard to get much better singers than that. I was wondering, did you play in Calgary? Because Mott and I got a chance to see Paul Rodgers, and I'm wondering if you were playing.
Yeah, I played in Calgary a couple times, I believe, with him. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we would have seen you for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yep. So then, remember us?
I was just wondering, like, what then, this is a little off topic, but what then is he like just before going on stage? And then what is Stuart like? I mean, they're vocal and guitarist, but like.
Was a little more like me. I like sitting back in a corner and just kind of draining my head. I don't want to talk to people. I just kind of want to get the thoughts out of my head, just relax. And a lot of guys get really nervous. They do push-ups. They run around. They you know, do things nervously. Paul was more of a contemplator, kind of sit back, didn't want to talk to people, you know, before a show. He didn't like showing up too early before a show either. He liked to show up and go right on. Stuart, you know, Stuart's just kind of, he's not really a nervous guy before a gig. He's not really he's kind of like a regular kind of cat. Me, I'm the quiet guy in the corner, just kind of draining my brain.
I wish you were quiet. That's so untrue. He's generally picking on the singer, causing trouble.
Do you guys, like, when you are out on tour, do you play lots of practical jokes on each other? Is there a lot of, like, ribbing and that kind of thing going on?
Yeah, Stuart took a new drummer we had on the last record, and I think it was our first rehearsal, and he goes and puts on the guy's passenger door of his car. I believe it was "I Have a Small Penis," I believe is what you did.
I printed it out on my computer, and it says, "I have a really small penis." And while he was talking, I had someone distract him and talk as he's leaving. And I went up to talk to him at the other window, and I taped this thing on his passenger door. And so, you know, we said bye, and I took a picture of him waving, smiling with this sign on his door. And he got like 3/4 of the way home, and people are just laughing and looking at him, and pointing and laughing. And he's going, "What's going on?" And then some guy blew it by saying, look at your door. And so he pulled over.
That's one of the best ones I ever heard.
Hey, I got to scoot. I got to do a sound check here at a gig. It's good talking to you guys.
Well, thanks a lot, Lynn. We appreciate it. Great to have you on the show. And we look forward to talking again sometime.
See you later.
Good luck with the gig.
Now I can talk about him.
That's right. Exactly. So tell us what he's really like.
He's like the alien face hugger. Can't get rid of him. Liz is one of my best friends. We just hit it off. The first time I saw him, I was putting on a benefit concert for the LAPD Memorial Foundation. And Paul Rodgers, I actually asked Paul if he'd do a couple of songs with us. And he come in and fly in and do a couple of songs. And when he heard what it was for, you know, for the families of killed in the line of duty, he said, "Look, I'll do better than that. I'll bring the whole band down. And I'll pay for it myself." And he did. And so that was the first time I met Lynn. I was, while they were having their sound check, Lynn was out there early, and this, you know, this mass of red hair and this bass came out, and had such the rock star vibe. I thought, man, that guy looks cool. And then we got talking, and we just hit it off, and sort of always remained friends from there.
Well, it's funny, you know, you talk about the rock star vibe, and I mean, watching you, especially in the music video for Drive, I mean, the way you play the guitar, I mean, it just looks so effortless.
Oh, that was a nightmare doing that bit. Well, I'd broken my foot. I work with the LAPD as well. I'm a specialist reserve officer with the LAPD, and I work with ICAC, which is the Internet Crimes Against Children, and we go around arresting pedophiles, human traffickers, child pornographers, and the like. And on one of these things, I was chasing a bad guy, jumped over a 6-foot wall, and I was just stupid and overconfident. I didn't have combat boots on because I was meant to look in plain clothes. I just had regular martial arts shoes on, which have no padding at all. jumped over this wall, and I know through martial arts and I parachute jumped, you land on the balls of your feet. And I was just overconfident. I landed on the balls of my feet on my left foot, and on my right, I landed on the heel, and I split my heel bone in two. So I had to have foot surgery where they put in two titanium screws. So I was on crutches and a cast for 8 weeks, and then I was on a boot but still on. And then they took the boot off. I was still in the boot, but for the video, I was still on crutches. So I walked myself into position. Someone came and took the crutches away, and I was wearing Uggs, the big padded, shoes, boots, because then my foot was swollen up too much to put rock star boots on. And so I'm standing there. Someone put the guitar on me, and I had to stand there for about an hour doing the takes and agony. But we got through it, but you can tell the look of pain on my face. And I couldn't move. I couldn't know how I normally move on stage. I couldn't do any of that. I had to keep my feet planted where they were. So
yes, that's lucky.
I'm throwing my hands about all the time. So.
Well, that's right. I like the cord whip onto the fret. The frets that look really cool.
Oh yeah.
I admire you so much for doing that work. I mean, it's so important. Mm-hmm. Do you need to play the guitar kind of as a release? Because that is so, it just sounds so heavy.
It is, but it's very, I've got a 12-year-old daughter myself. So as I say, I'm a volunteer, it's called a specialist reserve. So I don't get paid. It's just, and I do it when I can. I don't do it all the time. I just do it whenever I can. But it's very, very rewarding when you put these guys behind bars because, it's one less pedophile, human trafficker, whatever out there.
Yeah. What got you into that? Like, what spurred you, from, kind of the rock and roll lifestyle to be like, oh, I need to do this too?
It's about 13, 14, 15 years ago now. I was asked to play in the LAPD celebrity golf tournament as one of the celebrities where people pay to, on the day to be on a team with the celebrities. And there was Mark Wahlberg and all these people. And I did that by the third year of doing that, I got to know the deputy chief. We became pretty good friends, Jim McDonald, and I got to meet a lot of the families who'd lost, a provider because they did a traffic stop and the guy had some pot on and didn't want a third strike and had just killed the cop. And so, my heart went out to them. And then I put on this concert for the LAPD Memorial Foundation and it made a lot of money. So my name was sort of flagged on the LAPD computers. If you pull him over, he hasn't killed anybody, cut him a break sort of thing. And I was coming out of the local supermarket one night, a couple came out, big guy and a girl, and two guys ran out and identified themselves as store security. The girl ran, one of them ran after them, and the big guy just slung his fist to the side and smacked the security guard in the head, knocked him down. Could have ran, didn't. He got on top of him and started pounding, and I dropped my stuff and ran over and shouted at him, and he got up and threw a punch at me. Well, I've been doing this shit since I was like 14, so I just did a block and then put him in a nerve hold and got him on the floor and then borrowed the guy's cuffs and cuffed him. Well, 2 days later, I get my name's on the – I waited for the uniforms to come and take them to jail, and 2 days later, I got a call from the deputy chief saying, hey, we've been watching the surveillance video from the parking lot. You want to teach our guys some of that shit you do? So I ended up teaching the guys going for SWAT how to disarm at close quarters and that kind of thing. And then I met someone in ICAC, and they asked me if I'd like to come along with them on the raid. And I did, and served warrants and that. And the second time, I went back the next day, and they said, I took them all out for breakfast, and they said, listen, we'd really like you to join our team. So that's how I ended up.
Wow. That is super cool. Well, Stuart, we are just out of time with you here. So we want to give you the chance before we got to run off to tell everybody how they can find the new Heaven and Earth album, because it's wonderful and everybody needs to listen to it.
Great. Well, thanks. I'm glad you like it. I hope everyone out there likes it. you hear Frontiers has it, they've got, just put Frontiers into Google, Frontiers, either in the States or wherever you are, and they, and the Frontiers webpage, and they'll bring them out. And I'm sure it'll be available on all the platforms like YouTube, Spotify, Apple Play, and all that.
Awesome. Well, we are huge fans of your work, and we look forward to listening for many years to come. So thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to chatting again sometime. So, Stuart Smith, all the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye now.
Where you've been, just get in this car and let's drive.